Welcome to the Rosanne Worship Songwriting Podcast, episode 134. I'm Joel Payne.
I'm Chris Duby.
And this is a podcast to equip and inspire grassroots songwriters serving their local church and beyond. In this episode, we will be looking back on the first month of this season of the 12 Song Challenge, and we will be thinking about those songs that appear throughout the Bible, but which are not found in the Psalter. Yeah, Bible songs. I tried to think of a really short way of putting it, but I kept having to write Bible songs, but not the Psalms.
The other Bible songs.
The other Bible songs. So we, in previous episodes or challenges, we've done the Psalms, where we did about half the Psalms. Then we did the other Psalms, where we tried to do the other half of the Psalms, the ones that nobody wanted to do the first time.
And now not the Psalms.
Yeah. And next time we'll do not the songs.
Not the Bible. Heresy.
Chris, good to have you here. You went to a very important meeting yesterday.
Yesterday, yes. I went down to London to meet with CCLI and to catch up with what's going on with them, which was very, very interesting. Do that each year. And it's brilliant. It's very exciting. CCLI are amazing partners for us, the publishing company, and they're doing incredible work. Their heart to serve churches just comes through with every presentation, and they were kind of giving some feedback on stats for how things are going globally from their point of view, and particularly looking at the scene here in the UK, talking about some of the developments and plans that they've got coming down the track, which is all super interesting
and super
sadly
top secret.
Most of which I think I'm probably not allowed to talk about on the call, but it was really good, and I'm very excited about what they're doing. Song Select feels like it's becoming a more and more useful product for churches, not just for managing their licensing, but also for getting resources for their worship teams, and CCLI kind of going all in on that, making Song Select a really useful resource for churches in terms of actually leading the practicalities of leading worship, not just the sort of legalities of licensing.
It's a little bit like, in our very small way, how we had the 12 Song Challenge, and after a while you just start thinking, right, how do we write songs together? What are the practicalities of that? Let's develop something which, so when we created Song Club, and as we work, you can see once you've got a platform, you're always thinking, how can I make this more useful?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that kind of, you know, it's kind of there. They've got a commercial motivation, because obviously the more useful it is, the more people want to buy their, their licenses. But genuinely, when you meet these folk, their heart for serving the church and for encouraging the church in song kind of feels just very familiar. Obviously, they do that working with all kinds of folks, like independent people like us. But you know, they have all kinds of conversations with the big labels and everybody else, and they're right in the thick of it. And sometimes attract some flack for that, which is a little bit unfair. I think often, but they're doing a role that I often say when people are talking about CCLI, if they didn't exist, then we'd be crying out for something like CCLI to exist, so that with my worship leader hat on, I'm not having to contact every single different publisher and every single different writer of every song I want to use to try and do the work. And you know, from a publisher point of view, I wouldn't, you know, otherwise I'd be having to field endless emails from churches saying, oh, we'd like to use this song this week. So a licensing service like Song Select, like CCLI, and particularly when that's enriched with resources, although obviously other resources are available.
Well, I was going to say, Chris, wouldn't it be good if there was like an indie platform that did really similar things to Song Select, that gave access to grassroots musicians so that there is a much wider pool of music?
That would also be incredible.
Well, shall we therefore welcome our two guest team captains this week? We've got John Cairns and Rebecca Bees. Welcome.
Hello.
Quickly, hello. Starting with Rebecca, just give us a one sentence intro to you, your life and your meaning.
Can't. Just music, helping people in worship. I'm from West Oxfordshire.
Nice. John.
Just music. That's it.
I'm John. I'm based in Chesley Street in County Durham, just a stone's throw from Chris. A really good throw. It has to be a really good throw.
Yeah,
it's not that close, but yeah, we're close.
There are some very good throwers based at Chesley Street, aren't there?
There are.
Yeah. Do you like that? Great segue. Do you like that, Lee?
Yeah,
thank
I
you.
Did like that.
The most northern.
I'm not a cricket fan myself, but one grounds. Of the only reasons that people know about Chesley Street is the cricket. So, yeah.
It's a beautiful ground. It's lovely.
There we go.
Now, so the clever segue, the clever link was that it's great to have Rebecca's been on the pod a few times, and it's great to have John new on our team of team captains and supporting what we're doing with 12 Song Challenge. But also, John has been, over the last couple of years, developing a platform called Unified Praise, which is basically, is it fair to say, John, is kind of like an indie song select? Tell us what it is.
Sure. Yeah. So Unified Praise, it's a worship music discovery platform, and there's a particular focus on grassroots worship. So I hesitate to say that it's indie song select because I am really behind CCLI and what they do and what the resource they provide for the church. And it's definitely not a competition to that. I suppose it's somewhere in the middle of song select and a streaming platform like Spotify or SoundCloud. So it's one of the aspects is giving artists, you know, songwriters a place to upload their music that it may be published on CCLI, it may not be. But allowing them to upload resources for churches to use. But it's also hopefully a resource for churches where they can go and discover music, because that's one of the things that I felt like was really missing from worship music, was the ability to go and find songs that you're looking for on a particular theme or that covers a Bible passage or for a particular occasion. I just felt like that was really missing.
Yeah, and people a lot of the time say things like, there are no songs on the theme of X or Y. And the honest answer is, yes, there are. I mean, there may not be as many as you'd like, but there are loads. You just don't know them.
Exactly.
Yeah. I guess a lot of us look at situations like what you've described, where we think, you know, it's a way to give some access, it's a profile to other people and sort of see a problem and imagine there could be a solution, but few of us actually have the gumption or the drive to actually do something about it. What really compelled it? How did you decide, I've got to do something here?
Yeah, it was a few years ago. So I'm the worship deacon for my church. So I'm responsible for choosing songs.
Yeah.
And I've come to realize that this is a common story, but I was getting a bit disillusioned with the sort of mainstream worship, not because they're bad songs. There are lots of great songs that come out of mainstream, but I think it was more just that they're relatively generic and they sort of have to be to appeal to a broad audience. But I was thinking, well, what about, you know, if I specifically want a song for communion, I don't really have a great deal of choice, and it's also hard to find songs just by looking on Spotify for something like that. And then when I joined then I started to write songs as a response to that. So I was like, well, let's try and write songs for my local church, and got into that, and then I realized, oh, this is really hard. And then I spoke to Chris about it, actually, and he said, oh, you should join the 12 Song Challenge. And so I did, and then I was amazed at how many great songs were being written that I'd never heard of, and by people that I'd never heard of. And I just thought, well, this doesn't seem right. It seems like these should be discoverable in some way. And I like to solve problems. That's kind of the way my brain works. And so I thought, this is a problem that I have the technical ability, just with the job that I do, to solve it. And I run into other problems, like maybe my brain's not very strategy oriented, and so that's where I feel like I'm looking for sort of people who have that part of their brain firing to kind of maybe join alongside. So if you feel like that's something that you're interested in, strategy, marketing, that sort of thing, and this is an idea you can get behind, please do get in touch.
This is,
but, the actual like implementation, problem solving, I thought, this is something that I can get started on.
Yeah, Chris, you said you sort of had conversations with John about this over the last couple of years, and actually we decided to put some of our stuff on Unified Praise. Roseanne Capital. Just to talk us through a bit that decision and why you want to support this.
Sure. So I think, you know, John's put his finger on the problem there, which is that in the kind of wider mainstream worship music industry ecosystem, like just inevitably money talks and success, you know, like it's a sort of, you know, it's a virtuous circle or something that you just can't break into. And there's so much amazing grassroots stuff being written, and we're investing in that in so many ways ourselves. You know, that's in many ways what the 12 Song Challenge community is about. It's an expression of investment in grassroots songwriting and grassroots songwriting. And you know, the question of how do you make that discoverable, and you know, like what are the pathways, and you know, loads of us who have been writing in church music for a long while, you know, grew up in an age where you kind of were basically hoping that somebody else was going to grab a hold of your song and make it popular, make it successful. And I think, you know, there's an increasing sort of understanding amongst us that, A, for 99.9% of us, that's not going to happen in the way that we all dreamed when we were teenagers or whatever. And B, that isn't really healthy, because actually the diversity and the breadth, you know, like as we often say, the range of what could ever be a CCLI top 100 song is so much narrower than the range of the things that the church should be singing, and you know, the range of sort of idiomatic language and that kind of stuff. And so what we really need is a situation where worship leaders can find the really specific and the really small stuff that really directly speaks into their situation and their need. And that just does take a whole bunch of initiative. We can't hope that some big company is going to solve it with a load of money, because, you know, it's not, there's not in many ways like the financial incentive to do that. And so we have to just get behind across the board all kinds of grassroots initiatives to, you know, help these songs, these songwriters flourish, serve their churches, help the songs find the churches that are longing for them. And Unified Praise is just such a brilliant example of somebody doing something about that challenge. And I've loved talking with John about it along the journey. It's such an incredibly brilliant platform. Check it out if you haven't checked out. It's so astonishing what John's managed to accomplish just in these last months. It's such a brilliant, you know, such a brilliant resource for writers showcasing their stuff. So, you know, just at a pure technical level, it's a great environment for us to have our songs on. And then, you know, just a brilliant resource in terms of the diversity of songwriting. You know, if you think worship musical sounds exactly the same, then just go and browse the front page of Unified Praise, and you'll discover that there is such a greater breadth of brilliant songs that are kind of waiting to find churches who need to sing them.
I am on the front page of Unified Praise.
Wow.
And it says, there's a song here called You Are Calling.
Oh, I thought you meant
Rebecca
you
Bees.
Were on.
No, I'm not. I have the least instinct for personal song promotion of any songwriter I know. You're lucky that any of you know any of my songs. But yeah, Rebecca's on there. David Cottrell is on there.
That's right.
John Cairns is on there. Lorna Heaps, Andy Biggs. This is great stuff. Eleanor Law, Jacob Spencer. I know so many of these names I know. This is from our community. So can you, in a real nuggety way, tell people what they need to do, John, if they want to get their stuff on the platform?
Yes. If you're part of the 12 Song Challenge, then you have an invite to join Unify Praise as a artist and start uploading your songs. If you go to the Clubhouse, then there is a comment there or a post from me saying, why am I invited to Unify Praise? Go and follow the link, and it should be hopefully self-explanatory. It will get you set up. You can set up your profile. Just to say, the songs that you upload, we encourage them to be finished songs, in your opinion, but they don't need to be well-produced. They don't need to meet a particular sort of standard. It's really what you're comfortable to put out to the world, to say, here is the song, this is a good representation, of the song. So don't worry that you need to meet any particular standards.
Great stuff. Thank you. 12 Song Challenge. We've already had 1 month of the 12 Song Challenge. Amazing. Where did it go? April. It's very warm, actually, generally, with a little bit of rain.
It's gone so quickly that I haven't even written a song. Don't tell anyone. I haven't written one either.
I've literally, the next thing I have to do after recording this podcast is record my song about the very hasty generosity of God. how he's quick to give songs.
It did strike me as I was messaging my team, kind of feeling very ashamed as the team leader to have not put up a song. Actually, it probably is a good moment. Like, even if you're listening to this on May the 1st, just get underway. Throw something up for April. Mm-hmm. Throw something straight up for May. It is better if you get on with it straight away. But actually just getting yourself into the habit and gaining the momentum in your songwriting by just doing it. Just throw up four lines, like,
yeah,
boom, boom, boom.
Two of them are la 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 la's. Just throw something up and get underway.
Yeah. So Rebecca, I should say to the listeners, we're gonna mix up the approach to the kind of the review of the month this year. It might be a little bit less song heavy sometimes. We're going to try and include a little bit more feedback and critique in the way that we do things. But we start off just by picking out a couple of songs from the challenge. So I've asked Rebecca and John both to pick out a song, not necessarily from their team, but just from what's been going on that just showcases in some way some good engagement with the challenge. So, Rebecca, over to you.
Over to me. So I've picked a song by Chris Todd, who I believe is the, this is his first challenge. And he said in his little blurb, so I'm a very big novice. I'll be honest with you, I don't understand what he's connecting himself to, because this was so good.
You don't believe him.
A novice in what? So he's reflecting on Jesus and the giving of himself, the incarnation, and on the cross and what that means for us. Bless him, I'm not even grade one level piano, can't read music, so basically talk to me like I'm five with any tips. So first of all, I love that, because there was like, please just come, what have you got to say? And he's really engaged with the feedback. But the song in itself, like, it's totally memorable. And I think it's got great themes. Yes, there are some things that we've talked about. He hasn't yet got a second version up, but he has got it. He's working on that in the moment. So that's great. And I thought it was a good, good content. It was good themes and the melody. And I instantly wanted to pick up a guitar and play along.
Cool. Should we have a listen?
You dwelt in glory and light, eternal Son, the Father's delight. Word of creation and beloved before, forever complete, content and adored. Yet, Jesus, you were humbled for me, became nothing, took on flesh that I might see. Unending beauty in those dying words you'd speak. It is finished, gave everything to me. You gave me your innocence, and you took my blame. You gave me your righteousness in place of shame. You left your glory, so hell can no more claim, nor snatch me from your gracious hands again. Before Abraham breathed, you were I am, holding the oceans in the palm of your hand. The stars trace a path moving at your command. History follows your glorious plan. Yet, Jesus, you were wounded for me, pierced for my sins, crushed for my iniquities. The punishment falls on you and brings.
Oh, thanks for that, Rebecca. There is a the word innocence there in the chorus, and it. There's a kind of there's an innocence to the song, isn't there, to the delivery, and you can sort of imagine there are some sort of shaky bits on timing and stuff, which you just get together with a couple more musicians and they'd all glue to get together, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I think this has got a feel to it. Like, it's not a song. This is a worship. You know, this is worshipful, and like it just drew me in.
Yeah.
So I love the idea here of telling the story of salvation history through the lens of God's generosity. That feels like a really strong hook. I even wonder actually whether that could be brought out more and more in those verses, so that the chorus kind of comes back together each time with that lens.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to John. What do you got for us?
Ruth Bidoff, who's part of my and David's team, Cumberland, or as one of our team members dubbed us, the lovely sausages, which I like to use.
Yes.
She's written a song called What a Generous God. And the thing that I love about this is it's sort of like a 12 song challenge poster song. This is the way to do 12 song challenge, because okay. she put something out on the 6th of April, so right near the beginning of the month, and she'd already been to a song share and had started the thing by saying, thanks everyone for all your encouragement, blah, blah, blah. And then she had this idea. She got a bunch of feedback, and then she put out a second version, and then had a bunch of feedback after that, put out a third version and said, oh, I did some refinement also based on the skills track, the song structure. So she'd watched the video and then taken some feedback from that and made some changes to it. And I also like that between the second version and the third version, she thought she was saying the second version, I'm not sure about the chorus. She ended up dropping that. And I think that actually really served the song to do that. So she's just making some really interesting and quite bold decisions about the song based on feedback. So I think she's really engaged with the community, which is great to see.
Make us a people of welcome. Hearts and our homes open wide. Give us a generous spirit, willingly sharing our lives. As we draw in the lost and the broken, help us give them a place to belong.
Chris, you must have been salivating at the structure.
Ah, yes, come on. Absolutely great structure. If you look at those, in my skills track session, if you listen to that on the thing there, I was talking a little bit about how paralleling the ideas in the lines across verses, so the line one of each verse and that kind of thing can really make a song much clearer on first listen, and it's so evident here that that's kind of sewn through, like the two verses like enhance one another by using the same concepts and the same language and the same grammar in the lines. So that is an absolute delight to my heart. I'm very glad to have made my small contribution to that, because that's brilliant. I love the idea of people of welcome, people of service, and then the response in that tag section. That's great.
This does my heart good to hear, because Ruth is a good friend of mine, and she leads worship in the church that we were a part of up until a year ago. Yeah. So I can see the fingerprints of our church community all the way through this song. It just is just for that church, and that it does my heart good to see that someone is writing for people that we know and love. And so she's written this because this is the series that they are looking at going into. So there are the 4 points, and she's pulled them out in the song. And then you've got you have called us to raise a banner of an extension. That is a sort of very recent word for the church. So she's just taken everything that is extremely current and put it in and say, here you go, church. Let's reinforce this in a really worshipful way. And be in agreement with the things that are spoken over us as a church. I just think that's wonderful.
Come on. This is what local church songwriters can do. If we level our skills up, we can write things that just speak so clearly and so powerfully into our own church situation in a way that no other writer... Chris Tomlin can't do that for that church.
No, he can't.
No.
Seriously, Tomlin, up your game.
But he could put in a tag for this one, though, couldn't he?
He'd write a chorus. He'd write a new one.
Send it to Chris. He'll finish it off with a chorus.
Chris, you're going to steer this next bit.
Woo!
Go.
Right, yes, well, Rebecca has very graciously and very kindly given permission for us to live critique her song on the thing. So she is actually going to play it live, I believe. Is that still the plan?
That is still the plan.
Do you want, and we will try and give our absolute best feedback here to help model what kind of feedback we can all be giving one another in the threads. Rebecca, tell us about the song and then play it.
So this month I love co-writing. Many of you know that about me. Love co-writing because it breaks me out of my usual patterns and helps me come up with more creative things. And James Martin sent me a little audio clip of him. He says, I've got a sort of a guitar riff, but I don't really know. I don't have anything more. What do you fancy a co-write? So I had a listen, and it just filled me with complete and utter joy. I was walking the dog at the time on the field, and it just had me smiling at the sky and the trees and the sunshine and all the beautiful things that God had made. And so it just kind of started from that, these odd lines, these odd phrases that sort of came through. And I knew that that's very much James's heart as well. He loves being in nature. So it felt like a kind of a good way to go. And I did put, I've got about 4 versions on Song Club, because I wanted to just sort of build where we went. So I was just like, what is this piece of music saying to me, and where do we come out of it? And it just felt laid back and chilled and fun and joyful. Just the complete joy of all the generosity of God and his creation. So that's where it sort of started and grew from there. So I think I'll do a verse, a chorus and a tag. And I will try and play it, but these are James's chords, and he's very, very good. So I'll give it my best shot. You fill me with wonder. You fill me with awe. When I take a good look at this world you've made, you've crafted with colour, with delightful design, the hidden depth of your own heart laid out on full display. Oh, it's a joy, joy, joy to live life with you. This heart is full of gratitude, and we will celebrate this great life you've given. We're grateful, Lord, that you care. You're a generous God. To the tag. Oh, it's a joy, joy, joy. It's a joy, joy, joy. It's a joy, joy, joy to live with you. It's a joy, joy, joy. It's a joy, joy, joy. It's a joy, joy, joy to live with you.
It's a joy.
Everyone clap your hands.
We're doing this over a video call, so this is totally messing with Rebecca's head now.
Totally messing.
What are you doing?
Yeah, love it.
Hey, well done. Yeah.
Love it, Rebecca. Thanks so much for sharing. Yeah, okay. Let's get into it.
You've been through three. This is the fourth version, isn't it? So we're at risk of making suggestions to undo things you've already changed. But hey, this is live podcasting that we'll edit
on TV.
That's totally fine.
Oh, this is such an interesting way of writing, like starting off with a little guitar hook. I don't think I've ever done it that way, and having it sent from one person to another person. I think you've done such a great job of kind of capturing the heart and the spirit of the music with the lyrical idea here, like the joy, joy, joy. That's strong repetition to announce the theme, and then using that as the tag makes a lot of sense. Can absolutely imagine people just really enjoying singing that joy, joy, joy tag. And actually, like, even though that's the beginning of the chorus as well as the tag, like, it's not, you know, that's probably not too much, because it's so perfectly encapsulates the spirit of the thing and the kind of main message of what you're trying to say, that I think that probably lands it effectively.
Okay, here's a bit. So the opening two lines, you fill me with wonder. Is that basically like that, isn't it? You fill me with the repetition device. Yes, bang, 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 boom, boom, boom. It's really nice doing a two syllable and then a one, because it lands it, and I think that gives it a really nice shape to those. When you get to the third line, I can hear you're kind of self consciously separating look and at, trying to work out whether it goes on the end of that line or appears on the, because it kind of needs a two syllable word where it says look at the moment. And it actually really should be gander, because that is when I take a good gander. Because then you get the rhyme with wonder, and it'd be two syllables. And it also, this isn't really a serious suggestion, but there's something a little bit colloquial about that phrasing. So that's a bit I would look at. It would just be stronger if you could find a two syllable word there, because then that would pick up the same shape and you're not left wondering how you split those out on that particular line.
When I take a meander through the document.
When I have a bit of a ponder. It doesn't have to rhyme, I don't think. But that would be one that I think would just really help it. It's lovely. Delightful design is a really delightful expression as well, isn't it?
Although I'm going to leap in with my fussy syllable numbers and point out that there's a little extra stray one there. And I don't know, like, you could play it either way, like either the sort of the strong groove, which, no surprise, in a song by Rebecca Bice and James Martin, there's a very strong groove. Either the strong groove, you could look at it as kind of giving liberty, actually, for some stray like syllable counts and things like that, because the groove is what's going to make it kind of really clear for people. But I'd probably be minded still to, you know, not, another way to look at it would be to try and make your syllables, your meter really tight to match like the strength of the groove, and actually to, you know, to enhance and to emphasize the strength of the groove that you're getting into. And there are a few instances down there where you know your syllable count in one line will be different from the other, from the equivalent line.
Yeah, that's good. If I were a
butterfly,
better songwriter,
oh, yeah,
I would love to be able to get "You Fill Me with Wonder, You Fill Me with Awe" when I could take a good look at this world you've made and have those rhyming.
Yeah.
But I looked at it and I couldn't maintain what I wanted to say and the heart of what I'd got, and not just have a rhyme for rhyme's sake.
Yeah.
It would be amazing if that would fit, but I couldn't make it work.
Yeah, you've got a kind of extended rhyme scheme, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done. So I've made it. I've done it so that every sort of line of the final section, so made, displayed, and then gifts exists. So I've sort of done the end of each sort of section.
I think there'd be a lot of risk that you backed yourself into a corner with the rhyme scheme if you if you tried to go too tight here. It's like, because of the like the sort of image that I'm getting of the whole song is that sort of rich variety in creation, and so it's brilliant to be able to use rich language and not to sort of confine yourself to, maybe if you were going for a really tight rhyme scheme, you would need to be using slightly more predictable language. Sure. And that would actually be a detriment to the sort of multicolored, you know, effect of the phrases that you've used here.
Yeah. I often find myself falling into the trap of writing by rhymes, and I actually really like that you've just written what you want to say, and it, you know, it's not that it doesn't fit at all, it's just that you haven't fallen into that thing of it's got a rhyme and I'm just going to compromise on what I want to say for the sake of it. So I think that's really good. The thing that's stuck out to me, and I'm trying to work out whether it's maybe just because it needs more of an arrangement, like a sort of a band performing this, but the last line of the verse feels like it, I like the fact that it stands out musically in the sense of it's distinct from all the lines, and it sort of creates tension for the chorus. But I feel like maybe melodically it could go somewhere a bit different, maybe going up at the end of the line or something like that, just to, because I think it's up and down.
How did it go before, Rebecca? Just sing us that.
The hidden depth of your own heart laid out on full display.
Yeah.
But you could get out on full display.
Go up, something nice.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, easy. We did it.
Fixed.
Yeah, you could also. We want to do this for the pod, so we get to showcase some of this. But it could quickly get boring as we dig into the details of the songs. But now they're in full flow. Because I constantly have an editor's head on for songs. Like, I thought maybe the last line of the chorus, given that the verse, it's all been past tense. Mm-hmm. So you could say displayed if you could get yourself to it, and then you get a nice perfect rhyme with made. So that'd be an option, something that could tighten things a little bit. I thought at the end of the chorus, or in the middle of the chorus, this heart is full, and then there's this pause of gratitude. Could repeat full, this heart is full. Full of gratitude, and that might be a nice little hook. At that point, it might feel quite nice to sing the little repeat.
That is nice. I'll put that in now.
And then I think I agree. Jubies, just tighten up your syllables, tighten up your jubies, and all will be well.
I love your verse 2 lyric. I gotta say,
we didn't
give in abundance, you give in excess. The whole earth overflows with your boundless gifts. From the depth of the ocean to the furthest bright star, you've given us more. And this is a point where I kind of feel like you've almost phrased it for the rhyme. You've given us more than we'll ever know exists.
Yes,
but that's
I have.
Like, everything else there is just effortless, exactly how you would say it, and very stirring. But that the last two lines there kind of feel like they're sort of not Yoderized, but you know, the grammar is steered towards
their way
landing
to the final word, aren't they? Yeah,
yeah. And I just I'd almost rather not have a rhyme and for you to have the. It all is effortless as the rest of it, and that's such a, you've just the poetry of that is just beautiful. It's so stirring. It's the way it sort of it does exactly what it's trying to do.
It's quite unusual for me. I don't normally write like that, so I was a little bit proud of myself for branching out.
I really love it. I think that's incredibly strong, that second verse.
It's good,
up to where you land trying to aim for exists.
Okay, I've got other options for that, so I will go back and...
I mean, I love that concept. That's incredible. Yeah. Like, the idea that you get, like, we won't even...
More than we'll ever realise.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
than we'll ever comprehend is where I started.
Like,
but the thing you said is a deeper idea. It's not even just... It's just like, you've given us more than we'll ever even know. We don't even know it's there, and we'll...
Yeah.
There's stuff we'll never know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, there's more that we'll never know than we'll know. That's how much you've given us.
Love it.
Amazing.
Come on.
Yeah. That goes well with Gander. So,
it goes well with Gander.
Through the richness.
Goosey Gander.
Oh, good job, Rebecca. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I assume you have permission from James to do it as well live on the podcast. Thanks, James.
Oh,
good
no,
job.
I didn't, but thanks, James.
Yeah, thanks. Big shout out to James.
James,
he won't mind.
You're a legend.
And then finally, star of the month for the month of April is Crystal Meyer, who has been a great contributor to your team,
yes.
Chris.
Come on. Yes, getting stuck in on so many songs and such great feedback. Yes, star of the month.
Do we not have the rights to the actual song anymore?
No, we do. I put it in afterwards.
Do it as well.
Okay. Yeah, this isn't really radio. I don't know. Actually, I should check on the rights. You might have got really. You might be like, hang on a minute. I'm getting a lot of play on this. the challenge for May is, well, we already said it, didn't we? Songs of the Bible, or canticles is one word for it. So canticles tends to mean songs that are based on bits of the Bible that are not the Psalms. And in some traditions, there are very clear sets of canticles, like the Magnificat, the Benedictus, the Nunc Dimittis. In other traditions, we don't have names for them, but we use some of them. But actually, there are a whole bunch of songs in the Bible that we probably never sing. And we're going to explore a little bit about why that is and what we might do with them and so on. So when I say songs of the Bible, it's the bits in the text that are set out in a poetic form, and you can usually tell in your Bible because there's a certain way it's laid out. And there are reasons behind that, which is to do with the rhythms of syllables in Hebrew and Greek and other things that make it really clear this is poetic. We've got, I think, the first song in the Bible is in Exodus 15. That's the song of Moses, hotly followed by the song of Miriam, who, just as Moses has finished, Miriam pops on with her own little bridge.
With her tambourines.
With her tambourine. She's like, this is what you should... She basically takes all of Moses' long song. She's like, four lines would have done it, Moses. Four lines. And you'd have nailed this.
Horse and rider, he's thrown into the sea.
Yeah. There's another song, Moses in Deuteronomy. It's a kind of song that God gives Moses to sing in Deuteronomy 32. There's a song of Deborah in Judges 5. Song of Hannah in 1 Samuel 2, which is very closely linked to the Song of Mary, which is often known as the Magnificat in Luke 1.
Can we see this list anywhere, Joel?
It'll be in the notes on the podcast, and it'll be in Song Club as well, and maybe on the email that we send out with the invitation. If you're not getting these emails, by the way, it's possible that your email address has bounced, or for some reason you opted out of getting the emails, which means that I can't email you and say, are you sure you wanted to opt out of getting the emails? Well, my too, but, you know.
Sorry, I interrupted your
phone. No, that's fine. There's the song of Zechariah in Luke 1. There's the song of Simeon. So Luke, the first few chapters of Luke have quite a few songs. There's the song of the angels. There's two Christ hymns that, you know, generally thought to be most likely to be early Christian hymns in Philippians 2. Colossians 1, and then Revelation is full of songs. There's the ones around the heavenly throne in 4 and 5. And then the last song in the Bible, just like the first song of the Bible, is the song of Moses. So you get the song of Moses and the Lamb. And you've also got a whole bunch of really obscure and quite unusual ones, which no doubt Chris knows well, because they're kind of
my
that
absolute favourite.
Him.
Yeah, it's in 1 Timothy. And when I teach a history of worship course for our School of Theology at church, and I like to put up line by line. It's only five or six lines, so I might even just quote it, and I get people to kind of try and predict. Can you guess what they're going to sing about next? And it goes, he was manifested in the flesh. What are they going to sing next? Vindicated in the spirit. Seen by the angels. Seen. Preached among the nations. Believed on in the world, taken up in glory, which is like, I think that's one of the incredible values of looking at these songs of the Bible, is that they don't follow exactly the same predictable pattern. You know, even though many of our songs are based on Psalms and are based on passages of scripture, the songs that we sing, if you actually pay proper attention to the song in the text, even the really famous ones like in Revelation 4 and 5, if you actually look at you know, how it's set out in the text, it does, like, the things that get commonly incorporated into contemporary worship songs, like, it isn't all there. Like, and so actually a brilliant challenge that I find is to kind of think, okay, what are the bits of this that have been neglected or that aren't unexpected? And I find that there's just such fertile ground there.
What I just quickly want to say at this point is, for the listener who is going, well, actually it says in the text, they said this, they didn't sing it. That's fine. Well, we're taking a loose view of this. You're right. Quite often the ones that we say are songs in the text, it said they said it, and yet it sort of clearly appears to be a song. We're taking a loose view. If it looks like a song for this, let's call it a song. If you're not sure, let's call it a song. If you wonder whether it was an early Christian hymn or not, let's call it a song for the sake of this particular challenge. Chris, carry on.
Yeah, so a resource that I'd love to recommend here that is just a brilliant book anyway is a book called Worship in the Early Church by Ralph P. Martin, who is like a legit biblical scholar. It's a really, like, it's a proper scholarly, you know, level sort of work of serious theology, but it's so readable and it's really, really short, and it includes a chapter that looks at lots of these early, you know, the supposed early church hymns, and it just would be a great bit of source material for anyone who's looking for inspiration. And honestly, it's just a great book for expanding your perspective of New Testament worship theology as well. We also, Joel, you and I went to a conference with some of our chums.
Went to a whole conference chums from on this theme, yeah.
Chums from this parish in the States, didn't we? So perhaps we should say a word or two about that.
Yeah, the main thing I remember is just how big the hotel was.
So the Getty's Sing Global Conference was on.
Also, I had COVID, to be fair, and I was actually quite ill. So forgive me if I can't remember it all very well.
That is very fair. So they did, they smushed all of their, I think they just didn't want to send us for a coffee break. And so they smushed all of the sessions together into these 3-hour epics. So also that's another reason why it's forgivable to not remember every detail. But they covered, went through scripture and had different plenary sessions looking at different sections or different songs within scripture. Those resources are available out there. You may have to pay for them, I'm not sure, but that would be great source material. They covered all kinds of stuff. There was some brilliant stuff. John Piper did a session, and Jeremy Begbie of friend of the channel did a musical exposition of Philippians 2. There was a slightly strange moment where a guy was at great pains to emphasize that when Mary in the Magnificat says that he will bring down rulers and raise up the oppressed, but that definitely didn't have anything to do with social justice at all. Definitely didn't. So that was an interesting
moment.
Then a guy did just an absolutely stirring sermon on the songs in Revelation. So yeah, good material there, worth investigating if some of that is out there.
Yeah, there's a book by Douglas Sean O'Donnell as well that you could try and track down, God's Lyrics, which is looking at these biblical songs, like mainly the big ones. So what we normally try and do is give you some ideas to bounce off. You don't have to do it this way. You might have other ideas. But I suppose the main message is you don't just have to take the song and try and put notes to the words. You can do that if you want. That's fine.
Let me wave my copyright flag if you do.
Yes. So in some respects, you're better off not.
If you do, we will probably be in correspondence.
We will. I'm after you. No, we won't come after you.
Yes, just to clarify that point. Obviously, if you set a text from a copyrighted version of scripture, you don't own the copyright to the lyrics. And in fact, you may need to get permission in order to distribute your song.
That was. But you could sing it in church. At the very least,
it's totally fine.
Pick up the pew Bible.
And it's been done for centuries and generations. Please don't be off put by that, but just be mindful of it. Certainly at the point where you're wanting to release these songs into the world.
Yeah. So you could, like with some of those shorter ones in Revelation, for example, you can imagine you could go word for word and it would be doable. Once you start digging into the Song of Deborah and so on, you're going to, it's going to be really hard. So that is one way, is that you is to take the whole text. Another way is that you find this biblical song, you just find a chunk of it and you just use that little chunk. The bit that inspires you, keep it short. You don't have to cover the whole thing. What you could try and do is a kind of paraphrase or metrical hymn of the whole thing. So the reason I say metrical hymn is because quite often you have to paraphrase it into a shape that already exists, either you defined or that you found. And hymn texts, which have this meter of repeated syllables per line and so on, they just give you something to work with. You could work with a hymn tune you already know, or just kind of a sense of rhythm that you know. So that's, you'll find that quite often, especially with things like the Magnificat and so on. Those will have been put into a metrical form. So it's kind of, it's a paraphrase then. I want to suggest as well, you could take the song from the Bible and you could look at it and say, right, what's this basically about? What's the essential idea and gist of this? What would it sound like if I wrote a song like that for my context? Because quite often they talk about, like you say, the horses and their riders being thrown into the sea. And probably in your context, that doesn't happen often. But something else might. You might have an equivalent, you know, whatever it might be. So you might say, okay, what they're doing is this is a song which celebrates a victory by describing what God has done to remember it. And therefore, okay, I'm going to write a kind of storytelling song that celebrates a victory in the power of God through his actions and so on, which would just be a way of translating the idea of the song into your context.
The cyclist in their helmet.
The cyclist in their helmet have gone into the ditch.
My mind is racing.
You could go through one of these Bible songs and just grab a line and say, I like that line. That inspires me. I'm going to write a song based on that. And that's as close as you get to it. I think that's fine. There are hundreds of us involved here, so it'd be great if we have some variety. I also think you could look, and I would say this regardless, look at the context in which you find this Bible song. Read the chapters before it, read the chapters after it, especially if it's in a narrative context, so that you understand what it is doing in that context, why they're saying that stuff, why that tone, why those words, why that content. But also, you might then like to actually write a narrative song that tells the story that this song relates to, because they quite often are narrative devices, and then include bits of the Bible song in it. So there's another way of kind of doing it. Or, and I often think this is sometimes the most helpful way of trying to think about these things, ask yourself, what song would I want to lead after a sermon on this Bible song?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Strong. Yeah, and if you make that line the kind of hook of the chorus, then when anybody preaches on that passage or the passage comes
up, they will always choose your song.
That's going to be a really obvious song to choose, you know, which, you know, you can do as cynically as you like, but actually that's genuinely useful, isn't it? There's some passages, particularly like in our church, we have like extempore scripture readings and prayers as part of our Sunday worship. And there are some passages that, you know, come up frequently because they have a great kind of worshiping orientation, or the content is just really striking and distinctive, and it's so useful when you've got a contemporary song that has kind of that chorus as a hook, so that you can kind of lead in and from.
It can be a little bit frustrating as well, can't it? Where it makes you think that's what the song is about. Like that song from a few years ago, "Water You Turned into Wine." Oh, great! A song about turning water into wine. Oh, no, it's not about that. It's just,
yeah,
it's
like, that's true, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm going to use it every time anyway, because I don't know what else I'm going to sing.
Yeah, and I think that way of writing from Scripture, like, has real integrity. If instead of it being kind of a fleeting reference, or, you know, something you leap off from and who knows where you end up, actually, if you write with that as the kind of centre of gravity, that line that you've pulled out, you know, that's the thematic centre, and then, you know, everything else is a spoke kind of going into that kind of hub of the wheel. So that would be a way of writing from a snippet of a text that really has, you know, that isn't a kind of, it isn't tokenistic.
Rebecca, John, what are you thinking?
I have a question.
Oh, okay.
Of whether this would be a legitimate angle or not. But thinking about Paul and Silas in prison and that they were singing songs of worship and then the earthquake came, could you sort of imagine what that song might be?
Oh, come on. Yeah.
Hey, boom.
Is that an unwritten song of the Bible, maybe? Just putting yourself in that.
Oh, that's a great idea, yeah.
Okay, and the other one that sort of came to me was, I like the idea of David's song after he learns about Saul and Jonathan's death. And how, like, in those times of tragedy, like, this honest outpouring of a response of deep loss.
Yep.
That's kind of really angle I kind of like. Yeah.
I think we'd love to know, when you share the songs, we'd love to know, maybe just put it in brackets next to the title of the song. We'd sort of, even if you're not setting the text, we'd just love to know which song is in the mix as you're writing your song.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this has been really informative. I thought canticles were some sort of sea creature. So this is great, really, really useful. But I also, when I heard the theme, I immediately went to, in my mind, to the Old Testament songs, and I thought, oh, how are we going to make this congregational? Because the idea of setting something like that to text, I think my mind just went immediately to the literal sort of take a song and try and put it to music. And I think that would be really difficult with some of the Old Testament ones, probably more possible with the New Testament ones, like the Magnificat, for instance. That could work quite well. But I like the idea of a finding sort of an equivalent idea, like what are the themes in this song, and then writing something around that. Because my mind is always, how can we keep it congregational? That's what really the area that I want to push into. And I feel quite good about that idea, trying to write an equivalent song. So
what I would say is that when we look at these songs of the Bible, I think, like Chris was saying, they sort of surprise us by their content. They include stuff that we don't normally think is what you put in songs. And therefore, let it challenge you. Let's be challenged by it. Come on, and let's take it on. And you might need to find a way to make that work in your context. Mm. You don't have to be a slave. Just write the song that comes out and it's absolutely fine. But this is an opportunity to be challenged and say, I don't really normally write songs about X or Y or Z or the tone of it or whatever it might be.
Sea creatures and pomegranates.
What can I learn? And how can I let this challenge me? How do my songs measure up to that? If I use this as a barometer,
I think maybe one of the temptations is going to be to look at a song and then find a phrase that kind of feels familiar from other songs that we know. And so then the risk is that you just write a sort of, a more generic, because it's a well-covered theme. And I think what I'm going to challenge myself to do is, like, there's so many kind of names of God, so many ideas of worship in these songs that are really not covered by the kind of contemporary repertoire, by the well-known songs. And so I think that's what I'm going to challenge myself to do. And I offer that challenge, is to find a phrase. Oh, the early Christians sang that. And can we sing that? Can we sing that phrase? Should that be part of our vocabulary? And just nobody's found a way to make it scan wonderfully yet. And maybe I can make that contribution.
And should we do a prize next month for most obscure Bible song of the month? Selected and written on.
Longest theological discussion about whether or not it's a song in the comments.
That's great. Okay. Well, we're looking forward to this. Bring on May. And that's all we've got time for this month. So all that remains is to introduce our featured song. We're going to feature for this month, with Pentecost coming up, the song Spirit, You're Here, written by two obscure writers, Chris Juby and Rebecca Bees. Give us a quick intro.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, until next time. On Rebecca's song that she started here, I think.
Yeah, we wanted to write something that was a little bit more than just an experiential song of being in the presence of God. That's wonderful. But we wanted something that was rooted quite theologically as well. So we wrote quite strictly in Romans 8.
Yeah, fantastic. Mm. And it's got a lot of verbs.
And verbs.
Bring on the verbs.
I can give personal testimony. I've tried this song live with real people, and it's great. It works really well.
Yeah, come on, yeah. Real people,
amazing.
Yeah,
no way, we've never done that before. What's that like?
Yeah, no. It's a new thing.
Bye.
I'm trying. It's a new
Bye.
Thing I'm trying.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Spirit, your healing, leading us onward, raising us up to glory. Glorious life. Come in the power we need, you're anointed, no move, a mind, speak to us, God is true.
Spirit, you're here.